Good evening and welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, licensed counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Our topic this evening is dyslexia, and we have joining us as our guests, we have dyslexia practitioner Dawn Coker from A Kid's Choice Educational Services and former educator Benita Huggins. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, Dawn, I'm going to start with you. Would you tell us a little bit about you and what you do and a little bit about Kids' Choice also?
Yes, I was an educator, or I am an educator, for 20 years with the school system. And I got really interested in learning about dyslexia and trying to help some of these kids that struggle so much at school. And so for the last few years, that's what I've been doing. We usually do one-on-one tutoring. Sometimes it's in a private school setting, and sometimes it's at our offices downtown. And we just try to find out where our kids are and start there and start building a bridge to try to transition them into where they need to go, depending on their age or their grade.
What is a dyslexia practitioner?
Well, that's just a person that can look at the signs and say, "Ooh, yeah, that probably looks like might be, you probably should visit a team. You probably you're going to be a dyslexic student, and so you might need a little extra help with schoolwork. It could be math. It could be a number of things."
And then A Kid's Choice, you're with A Kid's Choice Educational Services. Tell us a little bit about A Kid's Choice.
Okay, well, A Kid's Choice is downtown, and it's in a beautiful building, and it came to be because of Denise Bankston Smith. She had a private foundation when she was trying to help her youngest son, JT, learn, and we knew he was smart, and she knew he was smart, so she went on a mission to try to find out how JT could best learn, and she ended up in Boston at the Landmark School. And so out of this, she's helped teachers, she's educated teachers, she sent teachers to Boston. She from this came a side of it called the educational services part, where we would begin servicing students in our area, because it's hard to find help for these students.
Yeah, not every family is going to be able to afford to go to Boston.
Right.
So y'all are basically providing some of these services that might only be available in larger cities. Y'all are providing those to the folks here in the Shreveport-Bossier area, correct?
Yes. Okay. We even have a student that we Zoom with, and he was here, and his family moved to Minot, North Dakota. So he's a long distance student.
Yeah. And Benita, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Well, I taught in the public school system for many, many years. And then when it was time for me to retire, I just wasn't really ready to hang up my hat yet. I had been one of those teachers that Denise had sent to Boston for further learning to help dyslexic children that we just, you know, things. I learned things there that I just really had not come across in my years of teaching. And so I really kind of got a real strong interest in that, because I love to read. One of my passions was teaching children to read. And I always felt bad for myself and for the child when I couldn't reach a certain child, or I didn't quite know how to reach that. I mean, I knew they were smart. I knew that there was just some little glitch of some way that I wasn't getting to them. And so after I went to Boston, we just learned some new and different strategies and different things about dyslexia that I didn't know before. So when this opportunity came up, I just decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and retire from the public school system and, you know, go full time with A Kid's Choice and helping children and that I could help with dyslexia, just more so on a one-on-one, you know, get that personal touch with the child and with the family, because we do, you know, work with the parents too, help the parents understand, you know, because a lot of times the parents don't really understand either. And so we've reached out to help parents also. So it's just been...
Well, and I work with a psychologist who works with y'all, and you really seem to invest in these kids and these families.
Yes, yes.
I've sat in on a few of the meetings, and it's really a team approach, it seems like.
Yes, it is. We're very vested in our kids.
Yeah. So what is dyslexia?
Well, dyslexia is, it's so many things, but it really is just the way the brain processes. It's a learning difference where the brain processes differently. And, you know, what works for the majority of your students or the students in a classroom, in a normal classroom, usually does not quite work for that student. And so it has to be approached differently. And many times it's about processing how language is processed. It could be about organization. There's just a number of things that have to be addressed when we say what is dyslexia. It's broad.
So we invite our listeners to call in with a comment or question. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. And again, this evening we are talking about dyslexia. And we have a caller already. I would like for you to go ahead with your question or comment, Olivia, please.
I just wanted to make a comment as far as a kid's choice has been instrumental in, instrumental in helping me learn about my daughter's dyslexia and teaching me how to teach her so that when she is an adult, she's going to be able to function in society. And I couldn't have done that without them.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for your comment, Olivia. You know, when we invest in families and children, we don't do it for those kind of accolades, but it is nice to hear those kind of things.
It is, and her little daughter is a superstar. She's one of those really talented students that can memorize just about anything, and then she can act it out. I said maybe Alex could come and take my place today because she is just that girl. So she has lots of struggles, but she is so talented and so smart.
So how common is dyslexia?
Well, there's a little saying, and we have bracelets made up to this to help people understand that it's 1 in 5. So it's very common, but people just don't really even realize that they have it or that their child has it. Sometimes we've had parents that, you know, once they find out that their child has it, the parent will say, oh, well, I've had that my whole life too. And I just didn't know that's what I had. So it is common. It's 1 in 5.
I mean, that's a pretty high prevalence, right?
That is a high number. That is a very high number.
So what are the signs and symptoms? I know we talked a little bit about, you know, what exactly dyslexia is. And I'm assuming that you can it can be a mild or moderate or severe. What are the signs and the symptoms of dyslexia?
Well, there are different, you know, like you're going to look for different things at different age levels. So if you were starting with a preschool year, if your child just didn't really seem to have any type of interest in reading or looking at books or picture books with you, if they struggled with rhyming, or you're trying to do nursery rhymes with them and they just show no interest whatsoever. Also, at about that age level, they should know about 10 letters, especially the ones recognize the ones in their name. So if they still don't even, you know, recognize those letters, that would be some things that you could look at that particular age group. And then, you know, as they progress and get older, then there's, you know, you're going to look for other things, like if they're in kindergarten but they're still not getting those sounds, they seem slow to get sounds, if they had delayed speech, there's just a lot of different things at different age levels that you want to keep looking for as your child progresses in school.
So it sounds like knowing those developmental milestones and when those things should be occurring is going to be really important, so that the parent will know or the teacher will know this child isn't progressing and maybe we need to take a closer look at what's going on.
Yes.
We have, I think Ann is back. Let's see if we can get Ann on the air this time. Ann, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Can you hear me this time?
I can hear you.
Yay! I wanted to know, so once you receive the diagnosis, and you say you have a school-aged child, how can you best be the advocate for that child? Because I know, people are learning about it all the time, and sometimes, in one grade you'll have allowances on tests, like, unlimited time or having someone to read the questions to you, and then you do, your child does great, and then the next year they say, oh, they make great grades. They don't need any allowances, you know. So how do you educate the public, or your, especially your kids' teachers? Do you have any recommendations for that?
Well, yes, and you can also, maybe one is teaching your child that he or she needs to insist on the accommodations. Those are so important. All they're doing is leveling the playing field for these kids. And it's by law, they're supposed to follow the guidelines. And, I mean, and we don't like to, you know, put our foot down and things like that, but we want the best for our children. And so sometimes you have to be a little stern and say, I can show you, let me show you where this is supposed to be happening. And the reason for it is because all it does is level the playing field.
So what about, I know that Kids' Choice does education and, yes, and advocacy. Are there any other advocacy groups that y'all know about? And, you know, we reach Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, you know, a pretty wide area. Do y'all have any other kind of organizations that you're aware of in other areas?
Well, the International Dyslexia Association is a great resource. And then also, I know that Texas does a lot in their school systems, and a lot of their teachers are educated about dyslexia, and they're just more in tune and know more about how things are handled. Even down in Baton Rouge, there is a charter school called the Key Academy, and that school is for students that are dyslexic. And I think they've taken a 8 or 7 or 8, maybe 9 parish radius of students from that area, and they teach them, they give explicit instruction with phonics and other things too, so that the kids can get back up to the grade level that they need to be.
So it sounds like it depends on the area in which the person lives,
yeah,
as to what services are going to be available. But you mentioned the International
Dyslexia Association.
Okay, and so would that be a website? Could they Google,
yes,
that?
Yes, there's a website. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they have lots of resources that are available. And a lot of times, even with the school systems here in town, we have gone, when Benita and I went to the conference, the International Dyslexia Conference in Austin a couple of years ago, we went and participated in something called Experience Dyslexia, which is out of California. They had made this program so that teachers could go through about, I think it's 6 or 7 stations, and like feel and have the experience that the way some of these kids experience it's when they're at school each day.
So we talked a little bit about some of the symptoms in children, younger children. Can you talk a little bit about some of the symptoms that might occur that we might see maybe in kind of older children, maybe school-aged children or even teenagers?
Sure. A lot of times, because I taught 4th grade and Benita taught 4th and 5th grade, we taught 4th and 5th grade to the older students, that would be when they caught it. That's when they would start to say, oh, something's not quite right here. What, you know, can we look at this? Can we, is there something else that we can do to help the student? And it's very prescriptive. We would have to do it based on, you know, the student. But suggestions, they would start, you know, watching. And as the classroom teacher, we would try to see what were the best tools and, you know, things that worked for that child.
So what about adults? Is dyslexia going to present differently in adults than it might in children?
I would say no. However, if they didn't struggle, it wasn't as severe, then they compensated at some point and figured out how to compensate so that their differences, you know, whether it's, if it's a spelling difficulty, they might choose to use another word, or they might always, you know, now we have so many resources available at our phone. You could Google how to spell something and no one, you know, and spell,
sure,
check.
Sure.
Nobody would ever know, you know, that you are just, you know, now my kids can correct me quite often with my spelling. but at least that, you know, that's something that's more available, more readily available.
We want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on dyslexia. Please call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So how is dyslexia diagnosed?
Well, usually the parent or maybe the teacher will notice that something's kind of just maybe not quite right, and they might a lot of times they'll call us and we'll speak with them and kind of go through some background, and that's how we start building our information to go from there. See, usually we suggest that, or we ask if they had ever been diagnosed with ADHD, because that's very common with dyslexia. And then we get them just kind of to tell us what are the troubles they are having. What a lot of kids, if you catch them when they're younger, like Benita said a while ago, don't rhyme. And who knew, you know? That I thought, you know, nursery rhymes were just a deal. But for some kids, that's really difficult.
So what about, would someone need to go to a psychologist or to a psychiatrist?
Absolutely.
Or is this something that can be less formally diagnosed?
Yeah. Well, it needs to be formally diagnosed, and it takes a team. It's a team effort. And there are so many people involved in that team that, you know, it's an educational diagnostician. You're usually the pediatrician also would be involved, and then a psychologist and speech therapist sometimes come into play, occupational therapist. It could vary, you know, but it's a team. It's not usually one person that just makes a diagnosis.
So it's no wonder y'all have these meetings with all these folks, because it sounds like it takes a lot of different services, and I'm sure it depends on the child as to what the services are needed and that sort of thing.
Right, and we want to always be able to advise the parent, you know, how to proceed, and you know, we are limited. We're the educational side, but there's so many other sides.
Yeah, sure.
And they do use screeners in the school system. There are screeners. I mean, that's a screener's not going to diagnose. It's just going to say,
but there could be a hint. There's
a possibility of a problem going on.
We have Michael from Mansfield. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Michael.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I've always been puzzled at dyslexia means you have trouble reading, but you say, why do you have trouble reading? Well, it's because you have dyslexia. How do you know you have trouble? Is dyslexia a condition, or is it a name for a collection of conditions, or a catch-all term? Is it a real diagnosis?
Yes.
And it's about the processing of the brain. In fact, there are so many, understood you will put a lot of like Facebook promos and things out, that will show that how the brain processes, how it reads when it's a dyslexic brain versus a regular person's brain, and how it tracks and how the neurons light up. It is amazing to watch things like that. But it is completely a different, the way the brain processes language differently.
So, and you said, you know, spelling. So it's not just a reading.
Oh, no.
It's not just reading. It's spelling. It's other difficulties.
Math, it could be, yes.
Yeah, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, all the, yeah.
So, and it's just not letters. It can be numbers and a variety of things.
Right.
So this is, you know, dyslexia isn't just about reading. It can present itself in different ways in different people.
Right.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about diagnosis and so forth. You said that dyslexia, it is a brain difference. It is a difference in the brain. Does it impact intelligence?
Our children are very intelligent. It doesn't really impact your intelligence. It's just that you learn to read a little slower than your classmates maybe, or maybe you learn a math a little slower than they do. But, I mean, if you look at all the people, like when we went to IDA, they had posters of all these very famous people, very successful people that are, you know, highly intelligent, but yet they've all been diagnosed with dyslexia. So really, you know, your intelligence is there.
Sure. So these are, so just because you've been diagnosed with dyslexia, this doesn't mean that your child can't grow up to be successful.
Oh, CEO of anything.
Impact
yes.
the intelligence level. It's just yeah. it's just a difference in the way that yeah. they learn.
Yes, and I love like reading little snippets or things about, you know, that when you're on like the IDA, they'll send you different little things. And there was, before we had all the spell check and, you know, the technology that we do now, there was a lady that, she's a doctor, her husband is a CEO. He had a hotline to her because he was very dyslexic and couldn't spell, but he was having to, you know, write reports and do things all the time. So he had a hotline to her office so that she or one of her staff members could spell for him mm-hmm. because we didn't have the technology then that we have now. Sure. So that was his way, you know, so, you know, he was a very successful man. Yeah. But I thought his wife's little story was so mm-hmm. cute because, mm-hmm. you know, they had worked that out like that. So,
well, and Henry Winkler also, you know, Fonzie, mm-hmm. he has a like a book series with another lady that helps these kids. It's called Here's Hank, and it is so cute, but it like goes inside their feelings and some of the chapters, and it's like, this is the way I'm feeling now, and it kind of gives some experiences that might happen to some of the kids at school, and so they can really identify with it. And it's also written in dyslexic font, and so it's been a real hit. There's a series, and I haven't read one yet that I didn't like.
So we have another caller. We have a caller from Lufkin, and I'm sorry we did not get your name, but go right ahead, caller from Lufkin.
Oh, hey, I did say it was Janie.
Okay, sorry about that. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
No worries. I am dyslexic, I'm in my 30s, and I got tested because my parents had a feeling something was up. And I don't know, and I'm saying this for the Texas people that might be listening, I don't quite know how they went about it, because honestly, I've never asked them, but they got some Scottish rights
people, Scottish rights people.
To come from Dallas to test me, and I failed, or passed, depending on how you look at it. But I was also very lucky that there was a school in town, in Lufkin, that was partially founded for dyslexic children. So I went to school every day. I also went to dyslexic therapy every day, and also not just reading therapy, because I did not understand the concept of an alphabet, but also math therapy. Mm-hmm. So I got both, which was amazing.
That is.
And I ended up graduating summa cum laude from University of North Texas.
Awesome. That's, yeah.
So, if people see the signs and you get help, then you can do amazing things.
Absolutely.
And I was really just passing through, and I was like, dyslexic. I still can't even spell it. I'm like, I gotta listen to this. I gotta call up.
Well, congratulations, Jay. You're another success story. That is awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call. So, first, let me invite our other listeners. We've gotten so many great calls. The number's 1-800-552-8502. You mentioned dyslexic font. What is that?
It's just a new font that makes it easier for the children to read. It's a little larger print, and a lot of kids now have learned how to even switch that over. Like if they have a Chromebook or on their, you know, their tablet, mm-hmm. that they could even switch things that they are reading to the dyslexic font.
Okay.
In school or whatever, so that it's just a little clearer for them mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. read.
We have another caller. We have Alex from Shreveport. Alex, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi. Yeah, I am I'm 29, or I will be 29, and when I was younger, I was never diagnosed with anything until in high school, and one of the things that my parents thought that it could have been was dyslexia, because like you said, the teachers would always say, like, oh, he's very bright, but just makes careless mistakes or just doesn't pay attention. And so eventually we found out that, you know, I was diagnosed with ADD, or predominantly inattentive ADHD now. But and I was just curious, mainly about what those experiences were like that y'all mentioned when you went to Boston or California. I don't remember, but how they would kind of, what that, how the children experience dyslexia, because for a long time I thought that was my difficulty with reading, but it never, from everything else that I found out, it really seemed to just be the focus that was the problem. And, you know, I went to Sylvan and could kind of grasp what they were saying. It just took a lot of energy and just discipline. And, you know, and then once I ended up being diagnosed, it was much easier to deal with, too, because I knew what was going on with me. And, you know, and there, it was much easier than something that other people couldn't understand what I was seeing, such as, like, I was just curious how, at least from what y'all understand, how that is, how they perceive, how children perceive that do have dyslexia.
Well, I think that we just try to give them a lot of strategies, and when maybe if they're writing, we really give them explicit instruction, and we model, and when we use graphic organizers, and it sounds like you were an advocate for yourself, and so you knew how you learned best. So when our students, when we can show them how they can learn, it's the best way for them to learn, then they can advocate for themselves also. They know how they need to study. They know how they need to, what graphic organizers they need in order to write. They might know that they have to do two column notes when they're reading nonfiction text. And all these things are going to help them process what they're reading. And another student might not have to go through as much to be able to do that successfully, but it doesn't mean that they're not as bright as the other student.
So I think that the caller was asking about, did y'all mention a booth that you visited?
Well, we did at the International Dyslexia Association, the conference in Austin. We went to a workshop or a class, a breakout, and we got to do this. It's called Experience Dyslexia, mm-hmm. and it's
six different steps that you go through, and at each step, you go through a situation as if you were a dyslexic person, and it's really neat. We actually do it ourselves now. We've presented it to other teachers at their back to school workshops, and we could, you know, do it for other parent organizations or whatever. And it kind of puts you in that child's place, mm-hmm. and you go through six different little steps of, you know, how they struggle to read. You know, the stories are written crazy for you to try to mm-hmm. figure out, so you can kind of see, like, it's all how they're feeling when they're mm-hmm. trying to read.
So
it's
the way
a really
they
neat
perceive mm-hmm. words on a paper is yes. how it's actually written.
Yes.
And,
okay.
And if they were having to take something orally mm-hmm. and try to spell it, or try to recreate something that they have no foundation for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have another caller. We have John Michael from Bossier. Please go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, it was somewhat of a comment. So I'm a college student now, and I've had a lot of trouble over the years. And I have ADD, inattentive ADHD. And it took me a long time to realize that I had dysgraphia. And I have a diagnosis now, or a very strong suggestion from a psychologist. And it took me so long, although I had a lot of cues. And so I kind of wanted to give my short story in that. So I was a gifted student in school. And until the 11th grade, I was given trace the number and letter sheets by all teachers. And no one noticed. And so the things that really should have been obvious, I think, were going off the side of the page, mm-hmm. or not being able to compress my letters, or writing my name so illegibly that I couldn't read it when I picked up my test from the stack, you know?
Right.
And so you get a lot of public call-outs. If John Michael could write a little bit better, we could grade the test faster, you know? So I always try to share my story. I was the person who was supposed to look good, and for years I looked horrible mm-hmm. and still do, because it just takes me so long to write clearly. I also found out I was ambidextrous in the process of that.
Wow.
And I can write with both hands. My left hand's a little clearer than my right, so who would have thunk it, you know? Right. So that's my short aside on how I figured it out, and maybe somebody else will look at their kid a little differently from that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think it helps to hear personal experiences so that maybe others might recognize it in themselves, or even so that they can feel it feels it's more normalized. You kind of realize that there are other people struggling with some of the same things, some of the same difficulties, and makes you feel not quite as alone. So we had a few callers mention a few different things that I'd like for y'all to talk about, just a little bit, if you would. Dysgraphia was mentioned, dyscalculia was mentioned. What are those?
Well, again, it's taking in information, and it's in a different way. And so there are little strategies and things that need to be done so that student can learn. A lot of times it needs to be multisensory. When we teach math at a Kids' Choice.
And dyscalculia, that would be math.
Oh, yes,
correct?
I'm sorry, uh-huh. Yes. We use Chris Whitten, who is also from Landmark, and the Chris Whitten math. And he has, I mean, it's visual, it's kinesthetic, it you can move, you can go outside and hopscotch or jump, like the way when you're dividing or multiplying, so the student understands like the whole process, and it's in movement.
So these kids aren't just sitting down doing addition, multiplication,
no.
subtraction.
No.
They are actually moving and counting and
right.
experiencing the math.
Exactly.
Okay.
And making associations so that they, when they make the association, that's how they process. And so when they can make the association, like whether it's with, if you're doing decimals and you're using it hundredths and you associate it with pennies, and tenths you associate with dimes, then and then for those pictures even to be right there, for they can touch it and feel it and flip it or whatever, you know.
So getting the information in just through a different sensory organ.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then there's so many things now, like Benita was talking about the Chromebook and applications that students can use to be, some things will read to them, some things will allow them, if they don't know the keyboard yet, to speak, and it'll type for them. Just so many different new things that technology can help these students with, and, you know, it's changing every day.
I want to invite our listeners to call in with a question or comment. We've had lots of great questions and comments. If you'd like to call in with your question or comment, the number is 1-800-552-8502. So we've talked about how dyslexia can impact educational functioning. Can it impact social functioning?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, it can.
So how might we see social functioning being impacted?
Well, a lot of time it's just with the child's self-esteem. And, you know, that's the last thing you want to see, is for a child to lose their self-esteem, and just, you know, to think that they can't do something, and, you know, like just want to give up. So it does, you know, affect self-esteem, and you just really don't want that to, you know, to let it get that far before
sure.
that happens.
And that low self-esteem is going to impact how they interact with their peers, how they interact with their teachers, how they interact with their parents and siblings and
yeah.
everyone.
Yeah. Frustration. Mm-hmm. All mm-hmm. those things.
Yeah,
and that frustration, you know, may be come out as behavioral problems.
Right.
And then they're also getting in trouble.
And they're yeah. spent when they go home to try to do homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're not really even understanding why either. You know, they're not.
Yeah.
So what about as adults, how might dyslexia impact occupational functioning?
I would think that maybe like a lot of times executive function they might be the ones that are going to always be late, or if they don't have it in check, if they don't have the systems in place, it's going to be a problem as an adult. Maybe paying your bills on time, knowing that if you have to be somewhere and at rush hour, you can't leave 15 minutes before you're supposed to be there if the traffic's backed up for 30. I mean, those kinds of mm-hmm. things, that maybe keeping a calendar, putting alerts on your phone, things that we kind of do second nature. Sometimes it would be more difficult because they hadn't processed through all those things to come up with a like a
organizational plan for
yeah.
themselves, you know.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there any particular risk factors for dyslexia?
It's hereditary, or it can be hereditary. Mm-hmm. So you know, that would be, I guess, another sign if a parent or someone in the family struggled, that would definitely be.
So that might be a hint. If
right.
You see, if you have dyslexia and you see your child struggling, mm-hmm. then that might be a hint to go and get checked.
Right.
Have the child looked at by a professional. What about parents and teachers? What can we be doing as parents and teachers to help these kids who are struggling?
Well, if there's a battle every night with homework as a parent, you might want to investigate that a little bit further, like, okay, or if they have trouble transferring from the board and they really can't tell you what they read or what they were discussing in the class, they didn't process it correctly. So something is, there's a disconnect somewhere, and that would, you would want to investigate that. As teachers that, I mean, I think you know when your kids are smart, and you know there's something you just can't quite put your finger on it. That's usually what it is. I mean, there's a reason to go investigate that a little bit further.
And it sounds like thinking out of the box, and you know, trying to find resources of different ways, because you know you're talking about the learning math through a kinesthetic kind of way, you know, which might not really dawn on us, but it makes a lot of sense. You know, if a child has dyslexia or dyscalculia, to learn math a different way. So it sounds like, you know, not being afraid to think out of the box and trying new ways of helping this child,
right,
to adapt
and there are
and
so
cope.
Many yes that parents that research, and there's boards, there's parent boards, there's Facebook groups, and they just keep looking, and they, you know, they can kind of bounce ideas off of each other, and sometimes they pull their students from school and start homeschooling because they know that they've got to reach a point to be successful, and so they can catch up, and they want to catch them up, but they want them to master the things that they've already missed before they ever, if they ever send them back to public school or private school, you know, instead of homeschool.
I invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. We'd love to hear from you. Our topic this evening is dyslexia. You can call at 1-800-552-8502. So you mentioned ADHD a little earlier, and I think one of our callers mentioned ADHD also. Oh, what other disorders or difficulties might co-occur with dyslexia? I'm assuming ADHD is one of those.
It's a big one. Yeah, ADHD is a big one, or just ADD. You know,
I would think that, like I said, going back, if the process, the rhyming, the, you knew this spelling word last night and you don't know it when you get to your spelling test, they didn't make the association somewhere. They knew the vocabulary word, but, oh, I can't quite put it in a sentence. Or they, sometimes they have the baby talk, and you're like, I know they don't hear us talk like that. Why are they using the pronouns in the wrong place? Or all those types of things would let you know, something might be, mm-hmm. something's up.
So, and if a child has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and dyslexia, is that going to present differently than just a pure dyslexia?
I do not know about that. But it so often it goes hand in hand, mm-hmm. that's one of the first questions that we ask the parent. Have they ever been diagnosed ADHD? Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the ways. Even I had a student one time that when he is dyslexic, he's diagnosed dyslexic. When he was diagnosed with ADHD, his handwriting changed from illegible to legible, believe it or not. And that doesn't always happen, but that's just one of the little things that I remember that sticks out in my brain, because how impressive that somebody was diagnosed with ADHD and then they their handwriting became legible after they were medicated correctly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have a caller. We have George from Shreveport. Go right ahead with your question or comment, George.
I just wanted to comment. My son has dyslexia, and the way we discovered it was we asked him to write his date down when he was in the second grade, and he wrote it all backwards. But he read it correctly, but he wrote it backwards.
Yeah,
that's how we discovered that he had it. But one note that for parents with kids with dyslexia, we had him tested, Kettle Parish, and the way they testing worked for the modification was, it's best to do it at the beginning of the school to try to get them tested, because once they get him in the program and have him tested, he'll be tested whenever they discover it. So we discovered it toward the end of the school system year. So every year at the end of the school system that year, that was the only time they tested and recommended different modifications, which I thought was kind of crazy, because you need to do that at the beginning, and they would never change it. So I just wanted to give that little excerpt on that.
Thank you so much for your call, George. What services are available through the schools?
Well, the school systems have screeners that they screen the children for dyslexia if they think that there are any signs or, you know, signs there that the child might have that type of problem. And then if they, you know, see that problem there, they usually call the parent in. Usually, you know, the parent and the teacher might have a conference. And then they just start going through the process of the different steps that the public school system has to go through before, you know, they can really get to the modifications and things. And sometimes, you know, like this gentleman said, sometimes that does take a while. And so, you know, there are also outside agencies that you could go have your child tested with, too, that, you know, might be a little quicker sometimes.
So what about medications? Are there medications available for dyslexia like there are for ADHD? Or is this more behavioral interventions and educational interventions?
It's behavioral interventions. Mm-hmm. And once that they, like I said, once they learn how they learn, which I realize that when they're real small, that's a more difficult task. But when these students learn, whether they're in the fourth or fifth grade, even third grade, as young as the third grade, how they learn, they know what their go-to is. When I see this, I know I do this. When I, you know, whether it's graphic organizers, it could be some are very oral and like can make up a song and dance or sing a song and dance, and that's how they learn their spelling words or multiplication facts, things like that. It's just so many different things that it could involve.
So it sounds like really working with that child, knowing that child, and developing interventions specifically for them that work with their learning style.
Yes.
I mean, if, you know, at the beginning of each school year, if you already know your child, because it's your child. So, you know, immediately, don't wait. Immediately have a conference with that teacher and say, you know, these are the things I know about my child. These are the things we've already learned about how they learn. And, you know, these, you know, make sure that, you know, these are the accommodations. And, you know, just kind of have that conversation with the teacher early on in the year. You know, don't wait. You know, some people want to say, well, you know, let's see how this year goes and you know. That might not be the best thing to do, you know, just to wait around a few weeks into the school year, because that could be a few weeks that, you know, the child was struggling or, you know, things weren't being met that you knew happened the year before. So it's a really good idea to have an early on conversation with the teacher.
And I know things like autism spectrum disorder, early intervention is important. I mean, my thought would be that early intervention would be helpful with dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia.
Yes, the earlier the better, because then you can start putting things into place.
So a wait and see approach might not be the best.
Yeah.
So go ahead, you know, dive in and see what services are available and get going.
Right, because sometimes, you know, you might think, well, you know, maybe they're just maturing a little slow, or you know, you keep trying to, you know, oh, they're gonna catch on to this. They're gonna catch on to this. But it, you know, if you start seeing something like that, then go ahead and address it.
Well, in worst case scenario, you start the services, they do great, and they don't need the services anymore.
Right.
Yes. I mean, yes. That would be the perfect thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So what treatments are available? What do we do with these kids? How can we help them?
Well, depending on the severity, a lot of times it's a phonological
issue, and so we might have to go back and reteach the sound, the consonant and the vowel sounds from the very beginning, and then we would not progress until they are successful and reach the mastery level. And that just doesn't happen in the classroom because it's at such a faster pace. So these students would have to go back a lot of it and relearn sounds, and you know, and there might be some as they get older, it might be they've missed some sounds, and how to, that teaches them how to decode words. And it's just like we usually use the Wilson reading system, which is a tier 3 intervention. If in the school system it would be a tier 3 intervention. Most people around here aren't trained in the Wilson. It's a multisensory approach though, and when the students do this, they learn and do not progress until they're ready to progress for the sounds, the digraphs, the short vowels, the long vowels. They learn syllable types so that they have a way to attack unknown words. And then that's how they become more fluent readers. And when you're more fluent, then you have a better comprehension.
And you mentioned tier 3. What is that?
Well, that's just like a level where a student in school would be pulled maybe from their classroom for so many minutes a day or a week, and they would have some instruction to try to revisit some skills that they missed or need to be retaught.
Yeah, and it would be small group instruction.
Yes.
So would a tier 3 be more intensive? Like what's the difference between a tier 1 and a tier 3?
Yes. Tier 1 is going to be like in the classroom. Tier 2 is not as severe. And then tier 3 is like, these are the ones that we have are at risk.
And typically the school start with tier 1, see how
right.
that goes, correct?
Exactly.
And then on
that's
to tier
correct.
2 and mm-hmm. then on to tier
yes.
3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what about dyscalculia? What kind of treatments or interventions are available for dyscalculia?
Well, a lot of times it could be that they don't line up, they don't understand place value, they don't line their numbers up correctly. There's some simple tricks. You can turn a lined piece of paper sideways and try to teach them about the spaces, and I mean explicitly teach them about what goes in each space, because they might not see it the way that you expect them to. Just like if you're teaching writing, you have to explicitly teach about what that little pink margin is on both sides of the paper, because some students don't really know what that is, and they're like, oh, I can just keep writing off the page. But you have to be teach with explicit instruction and explain and show and, you know, have them retell and model. Mm-hmm. But they also, with math, they have to understand what place value is so that they can, it all works together. And I was talking about the Chris Whidden math. He is so skilled and smart at how he teaches the divisibility rules, how he teaches, like, the fractions and the decimals together, it's and then with the remainder, it just makes so much sense. And he uses strategies and words that explain, as they're going through the process, they understand what they're doing.
And you said Chris Whidden?
Chris Whidden, Woodin.
So is there a website?
Yes.
He has books. He's written books. He has a great website.
Okay.
ChrisWhiddenMath.com.
So go and Google and get more information.
Yes.
And get some of these resources.
Yeah. In fact, someone at the office had a question for him, and so she picked up the phone and called to Landmark. She was just going to ask a question or leave him a message, and he answered the phone. So he's accessible.
We have another caller. We have Leon from Bossier. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Leon.
Thank you. Help me understand a code word that obviously you all understand, but I do not. Recently you stated children needed to learn how to decode words. What the heck does that mean?
So could you decode decoding for us?
All that means is to break down words into segments or syllables so that they can understand or pronounce the word so that they can read fluently.
Like if a word has a prefix, you know, you explain to them, this is a prefix, what a prefix is, what a prefix means when you attach it to the rest of a word, or same for suffix. Just if it's a multisyllabic word, you just break it into piece by piece so that they can learn to put all those pieces together to make it that big long word that they couldn't read before.
I want to invite our listeners to call in and join our conversation. We're talking about dyslexia. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. We've had some great callers, and we probably have time for a couple more people if you get on the line right now. So I know we've talked about a couple of different resources and things like that. What other services, resources, any other websites, suggestions, recommendations that you have for parents, for teachers, anyone that has dyslexia or has a kid with dyslexia?
Well, if you're looking for a good book on dyslexia, my go-to book is Overcoming Dyslexia, and it's by Sally Shaywitz. And it's just a really good book for parents. I've recommended it to my parents. I've given it to some of my parents that I've worked with their children, because it just, she really writes it in a way that you really understand and get what dyslexia is and how you can help your child. And she goes through all the different age levels, with different signs, different ways your child can be helped. So it's kind of my go-to book if I'm looking for a book to read about dyslexia.
And you said Overcoming Dyslexia.
And it's Sally Shaywitz.
Okay. And so this is something that could go on Amazon and order a copy.
Yeah.
And, okay, great. Maybe even check it out from the library or something.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And I've gotten it up from Barnes & Noble, mm-hmm. Amazon, anywhere it's available.
Okay. So Overcoming Dyslexia, Sally Shaywitz. Any other resources or suggestions or recommendations?
We've met with Laura Cassidy, who is Bill Cassidy's wife.
Senator Cassidy.
Yes, and they are very helpful. They helped start the Key Academy down in Baton Rouge, and they also have lots of information. He works to provide like anything that parents to help for awareness and also for laws and tries to help these students and their families.
So we have another caller. We have Christina. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Christina.
Hi. I have a quick question. I have a niece. She is almost 7 and she's pretty far behind in her reading, but has been in a reading school. They just had her ARD yesterday in her school for speech because she is also speech delayed, but yet they didn't discuss testing her for dyslexia. Everything that y'all talked about tonight, I see all those signs in her. Is that something that we should push for?
Yes.
Any other suggestions for Christina and Christina's family?
You might have to go outside of the system also. You might have to do some of your own homework, or her parents might have to come and talk to some, maybe start with a pediatrician, or they could call our office or something, just to kind of get you on the right road. It's so hard for schools to be able to diagnose when they have so many students, and they don't really diagnose, not in Louisiana anyway. I'm not sure about Texas. So that would be something that you might want to go on your own and see how that see what you can find out.
So what you're recommending is contact an outside organization,
yes,
such as y'all's, or a psychologist, an educational,
yes,
diagnostician,
right,
someone like that who,
mm-hmm,
might be able to point them in the right direction as far as additional testing.
Exactly.
What exactly the next step would,
yes,
be.
Right. Yes. Right.
So we have just a couple minutes left. I would like for you to talk just a minute about Kids Choice, because it's a great organization, and I think that y'all have an event coming up pretty soon.
Yes. We're having a golf tournament, and it's later in October. And this is to raise funds, because we're a nonprofit, so we can continue with our mission and help these families, educate the community about these students that are struggling and are really so intelligent, they just take in information in a different way.
So y'all are providing these services to families, to parents, to children at no cost, low cost?
It's at a reduced rate, yeah. Yes.
So y'all do like a sliding scale,
right?
So that it is more affordable than other options might be.
Right, and it's so few places around here that it's just almost unheard of in our area. And so that's part of the reason there's so many. If there's one in 20, there's so many more people out there that need to know what to do and how they can best help their students or their child.
Yeah, and getting these evaluations can be pricey. It can be very pricey, especially if the child is having multiple difficulties in multiple areas, requiring multiple tests and things like that. So it's great that y'all are out there providing these services that people can afford. How does someone get in touch with you?
Okay, we have a website. It's A Kid's Choice, and then it's ES for educationalservices.org. They can go to that website, or they can call us at our office downtown. It's 318-606-2230.
Give that number one more time.
It's 318-606-2230.
And if they want more information about the golf tournament, can they also go to your website and get
yes.
that?
Yes. Yes, or call
the office.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank y'all so much for your time and your expertise. We really appreciate having you on, Dawn and
Benita.
Thank
you for having us.
Thank you.
And thank you for everything that Kids Choice does in servicing our community and surrounding communities.
All right.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Sheila Lawrence. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.